thing as being too Jewish.
Thank you very much.
Shalom and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is decorated writer Tova Reich, author of the new book, The House of Love and Prayer. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. The Great Freedom Festival of Passover is coming up fast, starting this Wednesday night, April 5th at sundown. More than any other Jewish festival, Pesach requires elaborate physical preparations, inviting guests, clearing the house of all leavened food, a vigorous spring cleaning, finding and cleaning all the kiddush cups and seder and matzah plates, preparing a fancy meal with special ingredients, setting up all kinds of ritual foods, putting out the Haggadot, hiding the Afikomen, going over the seder ceremony itself in advance so you do it well, and on and on. By tradition, the night of the first Seder, the ordered meal that we celebrate on the very first evening of Passover, is supposed to be an extended experience. Many traditional Jews conduct their elaborate telling of the Pesach story until midnight, eating and drinking, of course, but more importantly, exploring and explaining the meanings of freedom in all sorts of innovative and creative ways. The freedom message of the Passover Seder is so central that in the Haggadah itself, the Haggadah, as some people call it, the book we use to tell the story of Pesach, it says that prolonging the telling of this story all night long is considered harei zeh meshubach, especially praiseworthy. Of course, not everybody shares this deep enthusiasm for the Passover Seder. Remember, the main meal at the Seder is not eaten till the majority of the Haggadah has been completed, which has long led to stories about Zadies, you know, Jewish grandfathers, I guess I'm one now, leading endless Seders that have everybody wondering the fifth of the famous four questions at the Seder: when do we eat? In any case, the telling of the Passover story, that's what Haggadah really means, that's the center point of the Pesach evening experience. And it all begins with the enslavement of the Israelites by the Egyptians and the arrival of a man named Moses to begin the process of redemption from servitude. Here's comedian David Steinberg's telling of part of the Moses story, which lies at the heart of the Exodus experience.
Moses is raised in the palace of the Pharaoh. When he's 30 years old, he goes wandering in the desert, chasing after a sheep. Moses was a prophet, not a pervert. In the distance, he saw a bush that was burning, yet it would not consume itself. A voice came out. Moses. Moses, with the astute bearing of a prophet-to-be, runs to the sheep and looks in its mouth. God says, Moses, take off your shoes from off of your feet, God says in his redundant way. For the land that you are standing upon is holy land. Moses takes his shoes off of his feet, approaches the burning bush, and burns his feet.
That was David Steinberg inaccurately retelling the tale of Moses for Passover. I have to note that while the Haggadah for Pesach is a pretty complete recitation of the entire history of the Israelites, and of much of later Jewish history too, one central figure is nearly absent from the Haggadah, That character, ironically, is Moses himself. By design, in the rabbinical creation of the Seder and the Haggadah itself, God is given all the credit for redeeming our ancestors from slavery, physical, intellectual, and spiritual. Moses, our greatest leader and teacher, the human catalyst for the whole liberation narrative, is mentioned only once in the entirety of the Haggadah. The message is that we were freed not because of the actions of human beings, no matter how valuable or virtuous, but because God chose to liberate us so that we might serve God. In any case, the experience of the Seder, whether you are attending one or two of them, or like this rabbi, many of them, include teaching Seders for religious school students and preschool students and adult education students and freedom Seders and so on. Anyway, the experience of Seder is a complete immersion in ways to understand freedom through words, songs, stories, foods, touch, taste, smell, even physical activity. Everything about the Seder has layers of meaning and purpose. I like just about everything about the Seder, except one thing, matzah. Now I know many of you have heard my rants about matzah, the true bread of affliction. It is a dry, tasteless cracker that we eat only because our ancestors didn't have time to allow bread to rise in the haste of their exodus from 400 years of Egyptian slavery. Personally, I can't stand matzah. I never eat it except on Pesach. It is, to me, the anti-food, and it tastes very much like the cardboard box it comes in. I've heard all the excuses for matzah. It's great with butter and salt on it. It doesn't take attention away from the foods you put on it. You can use it for months without it going stale. That's because it tastes stale already, of course. All of these arguments work equally well, explaining why we should eat newsprint or sawdust, which taste about the same. I will eat matzah on Pesach because I am supposed to, and I am a Jew, and of course a rabbi, and I have no choice. Otherwise, yuck. But it has come to my attention that my personal dislike of matzah is not shared by many other Jews. In fact, some think that my own bias against this bread of affliction is unrabbinic, un-Jewish, even slightly blasphemous. And so, in the interest of fairness to this bread of very little flavor, here's the wonderful poet Marge Piercy, a past guest of Two Jewish multiple times, and her more positive spin on matzah. Flat you are as a doormat and as homely. No crust, no glaze, you lack a cosmetic glow. You break with a snap. You are dry as a twig split from an oak in midwinter. You are bumpy as a mud basin in a drought, square as a slab of pavement. You have no inside to hide raisins or seeds. You are pale as the full moon pocked with craters. What we see is what we get. Honest, plain, dry, shining with nostalgia as if baked with light instead of heat. The bread of flight and haste in the mouth you promise home. That's the poem Matzah by Marge Piercy for Pesach, which starts Wednesday night. Well, we continue with our pre-Passover musical preview, a very silly Doug Kotler song. It's called Will They Ever Return, a parody version of the Passover story.
Well, let me tell you a story about the Jews in Egypt. They were bound in slavery. They were working for the Pharaoh, making bricks and mortar. They were living in misery. Well, God sent the plagues one after another with a strong hand. We were free. Pharaoh screamed in horror as the Jews left Egypt, crossing right through the mighty Red Sea. Will they ever return? Will they ever return? My temper is starting to burn. Lost forever all this fine cheap labor. Will they ever return? Well, the sun beat down as we wandered through the desert. We had blisters all over our feet. Why can't we go back to the
flesh pots of Egypt, at least we had something to eat. Will we ever return? Will we ever return? My skin is starting to burn.
Where's the sunblock?
Will we walk forever in the desert of Sinai? Will we ever return? Moses climbed up the mountain for the Ten Commandments. I'll be back in an hour and a half.
Jewish time!
But he stayed a little longer. We started to party and we built the golden calf. Will he ever return? Will he ever return? And will we ever learn?
Go down, Moses!
We should have some patience and not worship idols. Will he ever return? Children of Israel, don't you think it's a shanda how the Jews are drifting away? Oy vey! Come to services on Shabbos, support your synagogue, and celebrate the holiday. Will he ever return? Will we ever return to the place where children learn? It's a mitzvah! You can join together with your friends and family. That's how we will return.
That was Doug Kotler's Will They Ever, maybe Will We Ever Return? This great Freedom Festival of Passover is just a few nights away. It's almost too late to sign up for the Beit Simcha First Night Seder this Wednesday night, April 5th, with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. We only have a couple of places left. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. As Moses said, more or less, let my people rejoice. Make this year a Seder to remember with me. Our guest on Too Jewish This Morning is the decorated writer Tova Reich, author of the new book, The House of Love and Prayer. She has been described as a satirist, a critic, acerbic, even harsh. What she definitely is an outstanding Jewish writer. Meet Tova Reich on her return visit to Too Jewish when we come back here in a moment.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome back to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Tova Reich is one of the most acerbic and talented authors working in the, not only in the Jewish world, I'd say in American literature. Her new book is called The House of Love and Prayer. She has a whole series of novels in the past, but this is a series of short stories. Perhaps her best-known book for us was My Holocaust. She's also written 100 Philistine Foreskins, Mara, Master of the Return, and is just a terrific author. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Thank you.
So you have been called a satirist, comical, humorist. I'm not sure any of those really capture what you're doing. How do you feel about those kinds of terms?
I guess I mostly accept them. I also feel that I'm at least trying to do something larger than that. If I'm seen that way by some readers, I accept it.
not that we always have a choice in these circumstances. You know, it's very interesting. In one of the blurbs at the start of the book, Cynthia Ozick, great writer, compares you to Philip Roth. And says you're much more acerbic, much sharper than Philip Roth. That's both high praise and an interesting comment.
It's a good day for that because today happens to be sort of the celebration of what would have been his 90th year.
Right, right.
So, I am in awe of Cynthia Ozick. She's a great writer, and I also have a great deal of respect for Philip Roth.
I love short stories, actually. I know a lot of people think the novel is the ultimate form, but I think a collection of wide-ranging short stories can be spectacular. This is a great collection. You jump to a variety of interesting places. How did you decide which stories to include? I'm sure you've written many others.
Yeah, I have written many others, but this is basically a view of work that spans about 25 years. More or less, not quite in the order in which they were written, and just stories that I selected. They don't have any real thematic stream, although I can see, when I look at it more closely, certain things, themes that they have that kind of run through, but they were chosen simply because I could bear rereading them. So basically that was what it was. If it didn't make me cringe.
It's so hard to look at our own work without that experience. We will come back here on Too Jewish in just a moment with terrific author Tova Reich. Her new book is called The House of Love and Prayer and Other Stories. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a fabulous Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson, the Catalina Foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this spring. Beit Simcha has created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. A progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, giving weekly Shabbat services Friday night and Saturday morning, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests. Call 520-276-5675 for more information. Come to religious school for school-aged children or grandchildren, our fabulous Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah program, Torah Tykes experience, confirmation, teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org and sign up now. Beit Simcha's services, classes, and events are open to everyone in person Friday night and Saturday morning. You can find all the details at BeitSimchaTucson.org or join us every Friday night on our Facebook page, Shabbat Evening Celebration Services at 6:30, Shabbat Morning Services at 10 a.m., preceded by Torah Study at 9 o'clock, all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Facebook page is BeitSimcha Tucson, Beit Simcha Tucson. And our musical services are in person and virtual. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are both live and on Zoom. Access those by going to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Religious school is available in blended format too, some students live, some on Zoom. Passover's coming up fast. You can still join me. At least a couple of you, Rabbi Sam Kohan and Beit Simcha, our fabulous first night Passover Seder filled with song, meaning, beauty, and inspiration of this great festival of freedom. A catered, kosher for Pesach meal, prime rib, salmon, or vegan, soup, gefilte fish, salad, dessert, matzah, everything. Haggadot and joy are provided. Make this a Passover to remember. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. For more information about Beit Simcha to come to services, our great religious school and Torah Tykes program, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, rich array of adult education academy courses, all taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest growing Jewish congregation in all of Arizona. Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners. with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at too2jewishradio18@gmail.com. That's too2jewishradio18@gmail.com. Or go to our website, too2jewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as incredibly popular Jewish podcast. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 200,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify, too. Post a rating, review Too Jewish wherever you listen to our podcast. Those comments help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
And an early Chag Pesach Sameach.
And to you and your family.
Good and a kosher Passover. We started talking last week about the rich diversity of Jewish communities around the world. And in my view, they're kind of threatened by three factors. One is so many Jews having made Aliyah to Israel, where those communities become subsumed into the Israeli culture. The second is, of course, the assimilation of many Jews or the communities kind of waning. And the third is the typically the most viable way to express Judaism in many of these places is Chabad Lubavitch, which is not native, if you will. It's not necessarily based in anything in the local community. So that was just my take. So I'm curious as to your experience.
All right. So as expected, I have some nitpicks with your theses or your hypotheses. First of all, as we've said many times on this show, and as your listeners may still need to be reminded, in the years between 1948 and 1967, virtually all the Jewish communities in Arab countries were forced to pack their bags and leave. And these were ancient Jewish communities going back, at least in several cases, to the time of the First Temple, and in other cases going back at least to the time of the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
But the nitpick is they didn't all go to Israel. And some of them went to very surprising destinations where their diversity is alive and well. For example, in Panama City, there are two completely different Jewish communities, one from Aleppo and one from Damascus. Now, we think of that as like they're all Syrians. What's the difference?
They do not think of themselves that way.
No, they're like different races and, you know, very slightly different foods and melodies and whatever. But those differences and distinctions and diversities are alive and well long after arriving, in most cases, in the late 40s or in the 50s at the latest, from those places. So they've been, you know, almost 100 years in Panama, but still they keep their differences alive and well. You also have the pretty famous case of the Ladino-speaking community in Seattle, which we have a mutual friend who went there actually to learn Ladino from people who still speak it. It's the largest Ladino-speaking community in the U.S., and because of its presence and because one of its more financially successful members contributed a large amount of money, the University of Washington has a program in Ladino studies in Seattle, only place you can study that in North America. By the way, the university in Thessaloniki recently opened a program in Ladino studies where one of my oldest and best friends is the professor. He's also one of the few people left in Thessaloniki who still speak Ladino.
Ladino, yeah.
Now, so then there's the question of assimilation and disappearance and aliyah. Well, you know, the size of that Jewish community in Thessaloniki, or the size of the Jewish communities plural in Panama, has been pretty stable. It hasn't been growing exponentially, but it also hasn't been shrinking. So I'm not too worried about the future of these Jewish communities. They teach, they're very proud of their history, and you know, even if there's only a couple thousand Jews left, there's a thriving community, and people tend to move to those places rather than away from those places.
So I'm glad that there are such viable and vital communities. I want to, because I'm Jewish, and of course I'll have to argue, I want to share some counter stories just from anecdotal experience next week, but also continue to explore this notion of the vitality of certain traditions within Judaism in these communities when we come back next week. Thanks so much, Tom.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Morty and Abe, who are not religious men, are walking their dogs by the temple on Saturday morning. Morty says, "Let's go in. I hear they have great chopped liver at the Kiddush every Shabbos." Abe says, "They'll never let us in with the dogs." Morty says, "Just follow my lead," and into the temple he goes. The shamus, the caretaker and doorkeeper, stops him and says, "No dogs allowed in the shul." And Morty answers, "It's my seeing eye dog." And the shamus says, "Oh, okay, go in." Abe follows, and again the shamus says, "No dogs allowed in the shul." And Abe answers, "It's my seeing eye dog." And the shamus says, "That's your seeing eye dog? A chihuahua?" And Abe answers, "The Momsers? Is that what they gave me?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Two Jewish. Just for you, you should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week's portions are chosen especially for reading on the holiday of Passover. In addition to the usual suspects for Torah readings for Pesach, the plagues, the Passover sacrifices, the crossing of the Sea of Reeds, the washing away of the Egyptian army and its chariots, there's one unusual special Torah reading, and we will chant it this coming Saturday. It's taken from the portion of Ki Tisa in Exodus. It includes one of the more mystical and puzzling sections of Torah. Moses asks that God's presence be revealed to him, Moses, directly. God replies, "You shall not see my face and live." You shall not see my face and live.
The power and presence of the divine will be too much for even the greatest of our ancestors to be allowed to fully encounter it. God invites, commands Moses to hide Moses' face in the cleft of the rock. Then God allows the divine presence to pass behind Moses. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu, our great teacher Moses, who supposedly knows God panim el panim, face to face, actually only gets to experience God passing behind him. Although we are created, B'Tselem Elohim, in the image of God, we don't tend to think that we are somehow subject only to the whims of God. No, this curious passage teaches a lesson. We are not going to be saved by gazing at God's face, by the direct experience of God's intent. Our own human way is more complex, more subtle, more challenging, and perhaps more honest and beautiful. We have the responsibility to seek God's presence in the world, to find the God traces that are present everywhere, if we can make ourselves aware enough to look for them. On this holiday of Passover, and always. Well, then we may truly see God's face in the faces of our fellow human beings. When we come back in a moment, our guest this morning, the remarkable writer and satirist Tova Reich, explains how she relates to the deeply Jewish experiences of her characters in her excellent new book of short stories, The House of Love and Prayer. Find out when we come back in a moment on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
After 3 months of huge and increasingly vigorous peaceful civil protests against Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu's package of so-called judicial reform legislation, Bibi backed down. Well, at least he did so temporarily, moving the attempted legislative coup against the judicial system and against the Israeli Supreme Court up to the next Knesset session in May. Netanyahu only had to lose 4 votes from his coalition to endanger his entire government. And after his own defense minister came out against it and Bibi fired him, and most importantly, a growing wave of military reservists refused to report for duty to the IDF, the legislative effort was paused, for now, at least, until the summer session of the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, resumes in May. It is unclear what will come next. Perhaps 500,000 Israelis protested the judicial putsch by Netanyahu in a nation of about 8 million people. That's one out of about every 15 or 16 Israelis, equivalent to, say, 25 million Americans protesting. They waved many, many thousands of Israeli flags for quite literally 3 months. It's possible Bibi is just waiting for the protests to ebb away over the Pesach holiday and Israel's 75th Independence Day celebrations, and he'll bring it all back in May, but this has always seemed like a bad idea, and it is also quite likely Netanyahu has now managed to revive the dormant Israeli center-left, and that the resistance to this judicial coup will remain as strong as it is now, or even intensify in May. At the moment, Israel's moved away from the brink of this most unpleasant precipice. I'm not sure that Israeli democracy was or will be at risk in this so-called judicial reform package. However, I, here at Too Jewish, am quite sure that Netanyahu's efforts were an enormous political error. I've said that since January. Whether he did all of this to avoid going to jail on corruption charges, and I continue to maintain the corruption Bibi is charged with is about as low a level of malfeasance as you could imagine for a person who was Israeli prime minister for like 12 years, or whether this is Netanyahu paying back his coalition partners who want to be able to put settlements wherever they want in the West Bank without the Supreme Court interfering, I don't know. But it was an incredible overreach, and that has now been demonstrated. We will see what happens after this pause. Our hope and prayer on Too Jewish is that reason will triumph in Israel and that judicial reform, if it takes place, will be conducted in a sane way that doesn't appear to challenge the democratic institutions of Israel. In non-Israel news, Greek authorities arrested two men last week planning a mass terrorist attack on Jewish sites in Athens, including a Chabad place and a Jewish restaurant. The Mossad, Israel's spy agency, which contributed to the Greek investigation, says that the men, who are Pakistani nationals, are part of an Iranian terror network. A third man is wanted for questioning. The group reportedly entered Greece from Turkey illegally 4 months ago. After the investigation of the suspects began in Greece, Mossad assisted in unraveling intelligence of the infrastructure, the methods of operation, and the connection to Iran, the Israeli agency said. The arrests offer the latest indication that Iranian operatives are active across Europe and frequently target Jews. Last summer, when a record number of Israelis visited Turkey, Israel's intelligence service, the Mossad, and its Turkish counterpart hunted through Istanbul for an Iranian terror cell that had reportedly been tasked with targeting Israeli tourists. Also last year, Iran targeted prominent Jews and Israelis around the world, including the French Jewish philosopher Bernard Henri Levy. Joseph Schuster, head of the Central Council of Jews in Germany, was also targeted, according to German authorities, who recently revealed that multiple unsolved shootings at German synagogues are connected to Iranian operatives. In Greece, home to just 2,500 Jews, the attacks were believed to be imminent, officials said, noting that the suspects had received final instructions to carry out terror. Police searched for the suspects in Athens, southern Greece, and the island of Zakynthos. Their aim was not only to cause the loss of life of innocent citizens, but also to undermine the sense of security in the country while hurting public institutions and threatening Greece's international relations, the Greek police said. The U.S. has classified Iran as a state sponsor of terror activity around the world since 1984, and so they remain. Security analysts say Iran is more often turning to soft targets, Jews and Israelis, because its high-level assassination plots were foiled. And a Jewish member of Finland's parliament said that he was assaulted in a Helsinki subway station last week, and an assailant punched him in the nose and hurled anti-Semitic insults. Ben Beryl Ziskowitz, a member of the conservative-leaning Finnish National Coalition Party, said that in addition to the anti-Semitic comments, the assailant claimed that he was at fault for Finland's recent attempts to join NATO. Ziskowitz, the son of a Polish Holocaust survivor and a Finnish Jew, added that he was unfazed but felt the attack had dire meaning for democracy in Finland. Physically attacking candidates and officers of parliament, actually, must under no circumstances become part of Finnish society, even as a completely marginal phenomenon, Ziskowitz said. Finnish President Sauli Niinisto, hope I said that right, called the assault an offense against the people's power. According to Finnish police, the assailant was apprehended the same day. His identity has not been revealed. Fewer than 2,000 Jews live in Finland, according to the World Jewish Congress, but in 2021, the Helsinki Jewish community reportedly spent nearly €500,000 on security. Last year, the European Union's Anti-Semitism Commissioner criticized Finland for not having an official framework to deal with anti-Semitic crimes in the country. Last week, the baseball season began. This year, it looks like we will break last year's record of 17 Jewish big leaguers, including stars like Max Fried of the Braves and Alex Bregman of the Astros, as well as rising stars like Dean Kremer of the Orioles and Matt Mervis of the Cubs. It's nice to see so many members of the tribe playing in the major leagues, right? And that's the Too Jewish News of Jews around the world.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome back to Two Jewish, our guest this morning. Tova Reck's new book is called The House of Love and Prayer and Other Stories. It's a collection of terrific short stories. We talked a little bit earlier in the show about the fact that you didn't feel like there were necessarily themes. But boy, there's a lot. These are Jewish stories. Is that, you know, too obvious a constant?
It's not so much an issue of whether it's obvious. It's just the world I write about, that I base my stories in, and with the hope, aspiration, that it will not be just limited to the Jewish world, but would have meaning and interest for other readers as well. I see it more as a literary attempt, a literary effort, rather than kind of bringing to life certain aspects of the Jewish world. But yes, they mostly derive from that world, no question.
You know, you're not writing about the assimilated, by and large, the assimilated Jewish world that so many American Jewish writers write about. You have to know an awful lot about Jewish tradition to write the stories that you wrote here. Can you tell us a little bit about your own Jewish background?
Well, I come from an Orthodox background, although I am no longer Orthodox, and I'm very familiar with text and still deal with the text very closely. So that basically is, I come from a rabbinic background, and in which the men were rabbis, and that's basically where my sources come from, where my beginnings are, and these are things that most writers can't quite escape. So,
no matter how hard we try. Which is your favorite story? I don't mean the least cringeworthy, as you put it earlier, but what's your favorite story in this collection?
I don't think I have a favorite, really. I mean, the kind of thing you say about your children.
Yeah, but, I know. Yeah. Which is my favorite child? They're all my favorite child.
I love them all, or, you know, I have feelings about them all. They really aren't like my children, their stories. I don't know, different stories at different times move me, or I think well done, or I, you know, I'm okay with the story. I have very high, standards that I apply to myself. I'm a little cruel to myself. So, in that sense, I just want everything to be better.
What's the famous quote? I think it came from a sports writer, Ring Lardner. It's very easy. You sit down at a keyboard until blood comes out of your forehead.
I receive here at Too Jewish, I don't know, 100, 150 books a year that people want me to interview people. It's great. It's a great way to get a free library. I would say half are Holocaust books in one way or another. Is there too much emphasis on the Shoah in contemporary Jewish life?
Well, I think that that is really a question. And to sort of reduce Jewish experience to the Shoah, it's a very kind of dramatic and terrible event. But I actually feel, in terms of myself as a writer of fiction, I have never written about the Shoah, you know, in real time, that is, events that occurred. I never said a book during the Shoah. I've written about the Shoah in my Holocaust, my novel, but
of
that's
course,
not about the Shoah. It's
about really
Shoah
about the
memory.
It's about the Holocaust industry, really,
right,
to be honest.
The industry and how it's remembered and the Holocaust memory business, yeah, and the abuses of Holocaust memory also as part of my persona as a satirist and so on.
I'll be honest, I was pleasantly surprised to see a quote from the late Elie Wiesel praising Master of the Return, because in my Holocaust, well, I don't know, I'm not saying anything about it, but it was good that he didn't, I don't know, feel offended, perhaps?
I don't know what he felt. And now I can't ask him.
No, you can't. You can't, sadly. When you're weaving together a collection of short stories, and they don't necessarily have to be tightly connected. One of my favorite authors, Mark Helprin, is a master at putting a whole bunch of short stories that seem to take you all over the world. Some are Jewish, some are not. Did you want to have a geographic spread? Did you want to have a diversity? Or it was just, okay, these are the stories I like the best or I'm the least uncomfortable with?
I'm going to do another short story collection, and I'm okay with it. It will include stories that already exist. So there are more stories that I'm okay with. I think there is actually a slight stream that runs through all of them, and that in every story, characters are looking for something. They're kind of seekers in various ways. Now, sometimes the things they seek are really crazy, or, you know, like why do they seek this particular thing? But they want something, and that kind of drives a number of these stories. Or they're missing something. They're looking for something. So I think that's a kind of thread that runs through the stories. I really didn't have any kind of thematic connected story idea, intention in putting this together. Just stories that I think hold up. And I speak, they spoke to me. I hope they speak to others as well.
I think they certainly do. Did you revise any of them substantially? Did you revise all of them substantially for this collection?
I'm looking down the list of the contents right now. Yeah,
well, I know you've been working on a novel, so, you know, yeah. Still this book is only recently out.
I hardly revised them. A bunch of them, actually the majority, were published elsewhere. Were published over the years in various,
sure.
Journals, magazines, literary journals, and, you know, more popular magazines.
All those places that don't pay very much.
Some of them paid a little bit more, that's true. But, yes, mostly some of them don't pay at all, actually.
That's true.
But, yes, those stories in general I didn't revise much. They, went through a lot of processes. Some of
sure.
them were actually included in collections. And so they've had a life, but I really felt that I wanted them to come together as the work of one person, one author, and to be seen together and this work, these themes evolved over the years. I thought it was time to do this.
I think absolutely it was time to do this. It's a terrific collection. It's a great read. Not always easy, easy to read, but not always easy to hear some of these stories because they cut to the heart in the way that I think writing should. The book is called The House of Love and Prayer and Other Stories by Tova Reich. Where can people go to find out more about you and more about all of your work?
I guess they could go online. where
everything exists.
Reside. But the book will be coming out at the end of April. They can, get it at their favorite bookstore or however they, like they say about podcasts, wherever you get them.
Wherever you listen. It's
I'll tell you something funny about this book, this collection. The first title was Too Jewish.
Oh, my goodness. Really?
Don't you think the stories are really too Jewish?
Yes, I think so. Yeah. I'm honored, even if they made you change, or even if you changed the title.
I did. I like the title. I still like it. It's just, I think it was a decision more of the publishers. I'm just telling you this because it's just an interesting little note, considering that your program is called Too Jewish.
It is definitely called Too Jewish. Tova, thank you so much. We're looking forward to your new novel as well, and we look forward to talking again.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
You too. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be singer Hadar Orshalimi, singing classic songs from the Great American Songbook on her new album, all of which were composed by Jewish women songwriters. And join us at Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush, live in person and available on our Facebook page. Last chance now to sign up for our first night Passover Seder. It's at BeitSimchaTucson.org. Sign up there. It's coming up Wednesday night, April 5th at 6 p.m., led by me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Our playout this morning is from the Passover Seder. It's the Maccabees version of Dayenu, the classic Seder song in a variety of musical styles. My friends, have a Chag Sameach V'Kasher, a happy and kosher Passover, Aziz and Pesach, a lovely Passover, Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of peace.
Ilu ilu hotzianu hotzianu mi mitzrayim hotzianu mi mitzrayim dayenu 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 dayenu.
Elu ilu koralanu, koralanu etayam, koralanu etayam,
dayenu, day dayenu, day dayenu,
day
dayenu, 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 day dayenu, day dayenu, day dayenu, dayenu.
Natan lanu dayenu, 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 dayenu.
sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.